Hello, everybody. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Ezekiel chapter 26, which I will entitle Prophecy Against Tyre. Now, this is an interesting chapter. It has an apologetic flavor to it because it has the famous prophecy of Ezekiel against the city of Tyre. The date of the prophecy is in the 11th year on the first day of the month. The 11th year is the 11th year of Jehoiachin's captivity and Zedekiah's captivity, which happened in 597. 597 minus 11 is 586. So we see that this prophecy is being given on the year that Jerusalem was taken. Now, whether it was before the burning of the city or after the city, I don't know. It doesn't really matter. So we start in verse 1, in the 11th year on the first day of the month. Now, which month that is not mentioned. Some have thought it was the first month, Nisan, which is March and April. Others say it's the fourth month, Tammuz, June or July, the same month in which the city of Jerusalem was taken. One of my commentators said it's more probably the fifth month, July and August, the month of Av, the first of Av was 20 days before Jerusalem fell, in which time the news of it might be brought to Tyre. In other words, Tyre is going to find out that Jerusalem has been burnt. Actually, I said we don't know whether the prophecy was given before or after the burning of Jerusalem. If we assume that Ezekiel is writing history here, it would have to be after the burning of Jerusalem. As we see in verse 2, the people of Tyre admit or confess that Jerusalem is kaputsky. So we assume that this prophecy is given after the destruction of Jerusalem in 586. We also note in verse 2, Son of man, because Tyre has said of Jerusalem, aha, aha, the gate to the nations is broken. That has said in the past tense makes Adam Clark think from this it would appear that Jerusalem had been taken, which was on the fourth month of this year. But it is possible that the prophet speaks of the event beforehand. As again, it's not exactly clear whether it's a prophecy or whether it's history. I'm assuming it's history. So, with that background taken care of, let's read verses 1 through 7. In the 11th year, on the first day of the month, the word of the Lord came to me. Son of man, because Tyre has said of Jerusalem, aha, the gate of the nations is broken and its doors have swung open to me. Now that she lies in ruins, I will prosper. Therefore, this is what the Sovereign Lord says. I am against you, O Tyre, and I will bring many nations against you, like the sea casting up its waves. They will destroy the walls of Tyre and pull down her towers. I will scrape away her rubble and make her a bare rock. Out in the sea she will become a place to spread fish nets, for I have spoken, declares the Sovereign Lord. She will become plunder for the nations, and her settlements on the mainland will be ravaged by the sword. Then they will know that I am the Lord, for this is what the Sovereign Lord says. From the north I am going to bring against Tyre Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, king of kings, with horses and chariots, with horsemen and a great army. Now, several preliminary things we need to say about this chapter is that Tyre was divided into two cities. There was Old Tyre on the mainland of the coast of present-day Lebanon, Phoenicia, and there's New Tyre, which is an island out in the harbor off the coast of Old Tyre. As we'll see later, that's going to become very important. Also, we have another problem. There were two famous sieges of Tyre. One, the first one, was by Nebuchadnezzar, 586 to 573, a 13-year siege. He never took the city, never burned it down, but he did get the king of Tyre to submit to his lordship after the siege was over. But then Alexander the Great in 332, later on, about a century and a half later, he actually did reduce the city. The old city he completely destroyed, and the new city he captured. So we need to keep those two sieges straight. Now at verse 2, God tells Ezekiel, addresses him as Son of Man. And as I have said so many times before, I think it's in about every chapter, there's two reasons why God could have called Ezekiel Son of Man. Reason number one, because Son of Man means you have the characteristics of a man, and man is feeble. Man makes mistakes. He puts his pants on one leg at a time. So therefore, Ezekiel, you are a weak man. So don't go thinking you're some big shot because you keep having prophecies from me. The other theory is that God deliberately made Ezekiel a type of Jesus, who used the phrase Son of Man to apply to himself constantly all through the Gospels. Jesus had taken that phrase from Daniel 7:14, the Son of Man ascended into the Ancient of Days. It was a messianic term. Jesus wanted everybody to think he was the Messiah, so he called himself Son of Man, and God knew that was going to happen. And so he said, okay, we're going to make Ezekiel a type of the antitype. Ezekiel is the type of the antitype Jesus. Why? Well, Ezekiel spoke against the rebellious house of Israel, and he spoke of and prophesied about the destruction of Jerusalem in 586. Jesus also prophesied about the destruction of Jerusalem. His destruction came in AD 70, as Jesus spoke about in the Olivet Discourse, Matthew 24. So God says, Son of Man, in verse 2, because Tyre has said of Jerusalem. Now, we need to have some background on Tyre. If you look at Mount Carmel on the coast of Mediterranean at the far northwest corner of Israel, where the horn of Mount Carmel sort of juts out into the Mediterranean Sea, it's where present-day Haifa is. You go up the coast just a little bit, you hit Acre. You go up a little bit further, you hit Tyre. So it's on the Mediterranean coast in Phoenicia, present-day Lebanon. Let me read what Jameson Fawcett Brown has to say about Tyre. The word literally means the rock city. This name was applied to the island Tyre, called New Tyre, rather than Old Tyre on the mainland. They were half a mile apart. New Tyre, a century and a half before the fall of Jerusalem, had successively resisted Shalmaneser of Assyria for 5 years, besieging it. It was the stronger and more important of the two cities, and is the one chiefly, though not exclusively, here meant. Tyre was originally a colony of Sidon. Nebuchadnezzar's siege of Tyre lasted 13 years, that's from 586 to 573, though no profane author mentions Nebuchadnezzar having succeeded in the siege. Jerome states he read the fact in Assyrian histories. That was written in the 19th century. I read on Wikipedia that, and in several places, that Nebuchadnezzar actually did finally get Tyre to submit to him. He never destroyed the city, but he did get political allegiance from the king of Tyre. You notice that Jameson Fawcett Brown makes the distinction between the old Tyre and the new Tyre. Now let's see what Hank Hanegraaff, the famous Bible answer man, has to say. He says, Tyre was no small, obscure village. It was a great Phoenician city and a world capital for over 2,000 years. It was to the sea what mighty Babylon was to the land. Yet in the heyday of its power, the prophet Ezekiel had the audacity to predict for it a violent future and ultimate destruction. This downfall would be due to Tyre's flagrant wickedness and arrogance, traits that were personified in its ruler, Itabal II, who claimed to be God. Now in verse 2, Tyre says of Jerusalem, has said of Jerusalem, aha, the gate to the nations is broken. What does that mean? Well, the gate refers to Jerusalem. Why is Jerusalem a gate to the nations? Here's what Albert Barnes says. Many peoples passed through Jerusalem as the central place on the highway of commerce, e.g. in the reign of Solomon. This was viewed with jealousy by Tyre, who owed her greatness to the same cause. So people would come through Jerusalem on the way up the coast to Tyre, and so that's why Jerusalem is called a gate to the nations. Adam Clark agrees with that. So does the Cambridge Commentary, which says, the idea appears to be that Jerusalem or Judah was a door barring the entrance to Tyre, which being broken or turned or opened towards Tyre, after Jerusalem is burnt down in 586, the nations would stream with their commerce towards Tyre. The kingdom of Judah lay across the great commercial routes from the south, and no doubt intercepted much of the merchandise that otherwise would have reached Tyre, and probably exacted custom on that which was allowed to pass. So Jerusalem was a commercial hindrance to Tyre. She was a shut door. Jerusalem gets burnt down in 586, and ha-ha, now the door, the gate to the nations is broken. The gate to all the commerce from all the nations of the ancient Near East which were trading with Tyre is open, and now Tyre's going to get rich. Its doors have swung open to me, says Tyre. Now, I think the interpretation I just gave to you of the gates or the doors open to Lebanon, referring to the business, the trade, and the merchandise formerly carried on to Jerusalem, which is going to now be carried on in Tyre, as the Cambridge Commentary says. I think that's the correct option. There are some other suggestions, however. Here's option number one. The doors are open from Jerusalem because the inhabitants of Jerusalem have escaped Jerusalem and fled to Tyre for refuge. Interesting speculation. I don't think it's true. Option number two. The doors open so now that the spoil taken out of Jerusalem by the Babylonians because of the 586 destruction of Jerusalem, that spoil could be carried from Jerusalem to Tyre in order to be sold, so the doors are open. Another good speculation. I don't think it's true. Option number three. The doors are open between Jerusalem and Tyre because the captives of Jerusalem, enslaved because of the 586 destruction by Babylon, those captives would be carried to Tyre and sold for slaves. Of course, Tyre was in the market for slaves. Another good speculation, but I don't think it's true. I think we just say all that business which was formerly shut up to Tyre is now open, and Tyre is open for business. And the end of verse 2 tends to support that interpretation. Tyre says of Jerusalem, now that she lies in ruins, I will prosper. Prosper. Money. As Ellicott says, this exaltation is described as of a purely selfish and commercial character and shows nothing of the spitefulness and religious animosity of the nations mentioned in the previous chapter. Jerusalem had been made in the days of Solomon the great commercial emporium of the inland trade from Arabia and even from India, as well as the negotiator of products between Egypt and the Hittites and other northern nations. Doubtless something of this commercial importance still remained to Jerusalem in her decay, of which we have already seen evidence in Ezekiel 16. But however this may have been, a considerable city, situated as Jerusalem was, must of necessity have been the center of many of those transactions between the surrounding nations which Tyre would gladly have monopolized for herself. So it's all about money, not so much idolatry versus Yahweh. It's money. Commercial rivalry between Tyre and Jerusalem. Now in verse 3, the Sovereign Lord says, Sovereign, he's in control of history, and this is all about history, all these prophecies. The Sovereign Lord says, I'm against you, O Tyre, and I will bring many nations against you. Now we're going to see as we discuss this chapter, there are two times that nations came against Tyre. One under Nebuchadnezzar, 586 to 573, and one under Alexander the Great, which happened in 332. And so we have to distinguish. Now, I'm just going to make it simple. Whenever you see I of the Lord bringing nations, that's referring to Alexander the Great. When you see he as the subject, it's Nebuchadnezzar. So when we get here to verse 3, God says, I will bring many nations against you. That would be Alexander the Great and the nations that are with him. Now, that would refer after Alexander the Great. Antigonus, the Seleucid emperor, he came in 314 B.C., he attacked it. The Romans got Tyre in 64 A.D., and finally in 1291, Tyre fell to the Muslims, having been occupied by the Crusaders at some previous point. And 1291 is a key date. It's mentioned by all the commentators. That's when Tyre gives up the ghost. Now, if you believe that the nations are coming during Nebuchadnezzar's time, that would be another option, but I'm going to tell you why later that's not a good option. Now, this phrase in verse 3, where God says he's going to bring many nations against Tyre, that phrase, many nations, is key to interpret a later verse, verse 12, in this chapter. Ezekiel 26:12 says, they will take your wealth as spoil and plunder your merchandise. They will also demolish your walls and tear down your beautiful homes. Then they will throw your stones, timber, and soil into the water. Now remember that phrase, throw your stones, timber, and soil in the water. Who does that? They, the pronoun, the subject pronoun is they will do that. They will take your wealth and they will throw your stones, timber, and soil into the water. Now we're going to show later that's Alexander the Great. How does many nations refer to Alexander the Great? Well, some people say it refers to Alexander the Great and all the Muslims that came after him. But the easiest way to refer that is to the fact that if you will read the story of the Siege of New Tyre by Alexander, it's a very interesting story. There's a lot of detail on it. You can go to Wikipedia and get a brief summary of it. Alexander finally had to rely on ships in order to take the island of New Tyre. And these ships came from places he had previously conquered on the Mediterranean coast. Places like Issus and Byblos and places like that. And so each one of these states is basically a political entity, a nation. They allied themselves with Alexander, and they finally got New Tyre. So we're going to assume here that the many nations that are taking Tyre in verse 4 is the same people in verse 12 that spoil New Tyre. Take your wealth as spoil. They plunder your merchandise. They demolish your walls. They tear down your beautiful homes. Then they will throw your stones, timber, and soil into the water. That happened when Alexander, having failed to take the new city of Tyre, which was fortified, it was an island. It was also in a harbor. They could resupply themselves with food with ships. And so Alexander's siege wasn't working. And so what he did is he took the old city of Tyre on the mainland and wrecked it, took its stones, timber, and soil, and threw them into the water and made a causeway from the coast, from the old city, all the way out to the new city, and eventually took the new city of Tyre. So verse 12 is a prediction of that which was going to happen some century and a half later. This does not refer these many nations which will attack Tyre. It does not refer to Nebuchadnezzar, because Nebuchadnezzar never scraped old Tyre like a rock and threw the rubble into the sea. Nebuchadnezzar tried to get old Tyre for 13 years. Nebuchadnezzar tried to get new Tyre for 13 years, and he didn't wreck old Tyre in the process. That was Alexander the Great. So Alexander the Great is one of the many nations that got Tyre. It could be the Muslims later. It could be the other city-states along the coast of the Mediterranean. But at any rate, it wasn't Nebuchadnezzar. It was Alexander. Now, liberal skeptics like to say that this prophecy was about Alexander. Verse 3 says, I will bring many nations against you. The liberals say that refers to Babylon. Babylon came. Nebuchadnezzar came. And Ezekiel is said to predict that Nebuchadnezzar is going to scrape the rocks, throw the soil and the timber and the stones into the ocean. But he didn't do that. And so therefore, Ezekiel is a false prophet. Well, of course, we don't like liberals. And that's one reason we don't. They take God's holy word and make a mockery out of it. But what they do is they take the next several verses, which we're going to get to in a minute, all of these verses that have he as a subject, and they say these refer to Nebuchadnezzar, so therefore verse 12 and verses 3 and 4 do also. Ezekiel 26:8, for example, he will slaughter your villages on the mainland with a sword. He will set up siege works against you and will build a ramp and raise a wall of shields against you. Now that was Nebuchadnezzar. So the liberals are right that those verses are referring to Nebuchadnezzar, but they're wrong in saying that the prophecy about scraping the rock and throwing the stones and the timber into the ocean and making Tyre a place for fishnets, they say that that was a prophecy by Ezekiel of Nebuchadnezzar, and that never happened. No, it was a prophecy of Alexander the Great, and that did happen. Let's see what Nebuchadnezzar did when he came in on his siege. This is from BibleArchaeology.org. Nebuchadnezzar and his soldiers obtained nothing but a lot of hard work for their efforts. They kill people and destroy some defense structures, but neither completely destroyed Tyre nor got anything of value out of it. Rather, the plunder goes to the many nations. That's the many nations under Alexander. They are the ones who will obliterate the site and make it a bare rock, not the king of Babylon and his army. Now, going back to take up our narrative in verse 4, Ezekiel 26, they is Alexander the Great. When you see he, it's Nebuchadnezzar. When you see they, it's Alexander the Great. They will destroy the walls of Tyre and pull down her towers. I, that's Yahweh, will scrape away her rubble and make her a bare rock. Now, Yahweh did that through the agency of Alexander the Great, who took all the torn down villages that had been wiped out by Nebuchadnezzar, or by him. Alexander the Great also knocked down the city of Old Tyre. He took the ruins and made Old Tyre like a bare rock. He took the ruins in order to make that causeway out into the ocean, which left Old Tyre on the mainland a bare rock. And that's what is referred to here in verse 4. I will scrape away her rubble, God says, and make her a bare rock. Verse 5, out in the sea she will become a place to spread fishnets. So Old Tyre is a place to spread fishnets because it's wiped out. A rock is a good place to do that. Here's what John Gill says, this bare place for fishnets. This has been confirmed by travelers who have seen fishermen spreading and drying their nets and having no other habitations on it but the huts of these men. Now remember, this is Old Tyre on the mainland. Hoesius relates that he remembered one Hadrian Parvularius say that when he saw the ruins of Tyre, its rocks to the sea and scattered stones on the shore and made clean, smooth by the sun, waves, and wind, and only used for drying fishermen's nets, it brought to his mind this passage of the prophet, as it did to Mr. Mondrell when on the spot a few years ago, who says, you see nothing here but a mere babble of broken walls, pillars, vaults, there being not so much as one entire house left. Its present inhabitants are only a few poor wretches, harboring themselves in the vaults and subsisting chiefly upon fishing, who seem to be preserved in this place by divine providence as a visible argument how God has fulfilled his word concerning Tyre, viz., that it should be as the top of a rock. So Dr. Shaw says, this port, small as it is at present, is choked up to that degree with sand and rubbish that the boats of these poor fishermen, who now and then visit this once-renowned emporium and dry their nets upon its rocks and ruins, can with great difficulty only be admitted. So that prophecy was fulfilled pretty good. And that, of course, is for Old Tyre. I read somewhere else, maybe I'll quote it later on if I can still find it, but that the city of Old Tyre is now lost to the archaeologists. Nobody knows where it is. There's a modern city there now, but the old city has been lost to the archaeologist. Let's back up and go to verse 4. I left out something here where God says, I will scrape away her rubble. I mentioned earlier that Nebuchadnezzar, when he wiped out Old Tyre in his 586 to 773 invasion, he left the city in ruins, and those ruins provided the rubble for Alexander to use when Alexander showed up in 332. Now, let me read you some comments about that. This is from a website called nature.com/news. Alexander's engineers used timber and ruins from the old center of Tyre on the coast to build a 1-kilometer-long mole or causeway to the island. Here's what BibleArchaeology.org says. The historian Diodorus attested that Alexander used the stones from the old Tyre destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar to build his mole. BibleArchaeology.org also says the rubble from Old Tyre was so thoroughly cleaned out by Alexander's engineers that no trace of the ancient city can be found today. There's the quote I was looking for. Old Tyre's gone. Bare, scraped like a bare rock. Here's what John Gill says about that bare rock. Tyre was built upon a rock, and whereas the inhabitants had brought earth thither and laid it upon it in order to make gardens and orchards and plant flowers and trees, this should be all removed, and it should become a bare rock as it was at first. It denotes the utter destruction of it. It has its name from a word which signifies a rock. Gill, of course, is referring to Old Tyre, scraped clean so that causeway could be built so Alexander could get new Tyre. We move now to Ezekiel 27, verses 8 through 13. We're going to be talking about he. The pronouns here will be he that refers to Nebuchadnezzar, not Alexander. He will ravage your settlements on the mainland with the sword. He will set up siege works against you, build a ramp up to your walls, and raise his shields against you. He will direct the blows of his battering rams against your walls and demolish your towers with his weapons. His horses will be so many that they will cover you with dust. Your walls will tremble at the noise of the war horses, wagons, and chariots when he enters your gates as men enter a city whose walls have been broken through. The hoofs of his horses will trample all your streets. He will kill your people with the sword, and your strong pillars will fall to the ground. They will plunder your wealth and loot your merchandise. They will break down your walls and demolish your fine houses and throw your stones, timber, and rubble into the sea. Now notice in verse 12, it's they. We're back to Alexander the Great now. I will put an end to your noisy songs, and the music of your harps will be heard no more. So most of this, all the way from verse 8 to verse 11, is talking about Nebuchadnezzar's siege, 586 to 573. Nebuchadnezzar, of course, destroyed Old Tyre. He did not destroy New Tyre, so all of this is talking about Old Tyre, the battering rams, the dust, the men entering the city through the walls, hoofs of the horses. It's talking about Old Tyre. In verse 8, Nebuchadnezzar is going to build a ramp up to the walls of Tyre. He's going to raise his shields. The ramps are for offense. The shields are for defense to shield against arrows coming in upon the Babylonians from Old Tyre. Verse 9, he will use battering rams against the walls. He'll demolish the towers of Tyre. Verse 10, his horses will be so many they will cover you with dust. As Gill says, the dust raised by the feet of the horses, so numerous, should rise in such quantities and to such a height as to be like a cloud, which would cover the city, which is a hyperbolical way of speaking. Covered with dust. Your walls will tremble. They'll start shaking as soon as they hear the war horses coming, the wagons and the chariots. When he, that's Nebuchadnezzar, enters your gates as men enter a city, men enter a breached wall very fast. Likewise, the horses, the wagons, and the chariots will enter the breached wall very fast. Once a breach occurs, besiegers get excited and they start pouring through the breach in the walls. Verse 11, the hoofs of his horses, of Nebuchadnezzar's horses, will trample all your streets. He will kill your people with a sword, and your strong pillars will fall to the ground. That refers to Old Tyre. That's where the old city was strong at that time. Now, we go to verse 12. We're finished with Nebuchadnezzar. We're back to the nations. They, in verse 12, they will plunder your wealth and loot your merchandise. They will break down your walls, demolish your fine houses, and throw your stones, timber, and rubble into the sea. And that last phrase is key. When will the nations under Alexander the Great throw old tires, stones, timber, and rubble into the sea? When Alexander took those stones, timber, and rubble in order to make that causeway so he could get out to New Tyre and finish his siege. I think it took Alexander about 7 months to do all this. John Gill says this concerning this throwing into the sea. This was fulfilled when Alexander, with the ruins of old Tyre, its stones, timber, and rubbish, and trees from Lebanon, made a causeway from the continent to the island, and by that means took it. After 7 months' toil and labor of this sort, it was 7 months. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown says this, though Ezekiel attributes the capture of Tyre to Nebuchadnezzar, yet it does not follow that the final destruction of it described is attributed by him to the same monarch. Now, this is distinguishing Nebuchadnezzar and Alexander. This is a big deal. If you don't do it, if you make Nebuchadnezzar the one throwing the stones, timber, and rubbish into the sea to make the causeway, well, then the prophecy's false, because Nebuchadnezzar never did that. Alexander did. And so Jameson, Fawcett, Brown is dealing with that problem. He says all of these verses that we're talking about attributing the capture of Tyre to Nebuchadnezzar, that's fine, but it does not follow that the final destruction of Tyre is attributed to the same monarch, Nebuchadnezzar. The overthrow of Tyre by Nebuchadnezzar was the first link in the long chain of evil, the first deadly blow which prepared for and was the earnest of the final doom. The change in this verse, that's verse 12, from the individual conquer he to the general they, marks that what he did was not the whole, but only paved the way for others to complete the work begun by him. Now you see Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown are making that big distinction between the he and the they, as I've tried to point out. Thus the words here answer exactly to what Alexander did. With the stones, timber, and rubbish of old Tyre, he built a causeway in 7 months to New Tyre on the island, and so took it. Now, concerning this switch from Nebuchadnezzar to Alexander the Great in verse 12, and in fact, having commentary on the whole chapter, is a great J.P. Holding article. J.P. Holding is an interesting apologist. I love reading his stuff. It's on tectonics.org. You might want to look that up. He summarizes the conservative-liberal debate on Ezekiel's prophecy. Here's what the liberals say. They say that the pronoun, which is he, in verses 7 and 11, refers to Nebuchadnezzar's forces. That's correct, but then they say you keep going with that and get to verse 12, and so you got he, Nebuchadnezzar, throwing stones, timber, and soil into the sea. But verse 12 doesn't have he, it has they. So if you can tie the they to Alexander the Great, the conservatives win that debate. Now here's how the conservatives do that. The pronoun they refers back to the nations and peoples mentioned in verse 3. Verse 3 says this, so this is what the Almighty Lord says. I am against you, Tyre. I will bring many nations against you as the waves on the sea rise. So the subject in verse 3 is not he, Nebuchadnezzar, but is I, Yahweh. And so in verses 3 through 5, it was Yahweh who swept the rock bare for the fishing nets. Let me read that again for you. Therefore, this is what the Lord God says. See, I, that's Yahweh, I am against you, Tyre. I, that's Yahweh, will raise up many nations against you. There's nations, plural. And they are the ones that are going to take the stones, the rock, and the soil and put it into the sea. That's the link I want to make. So verse 3, I will raise up many nations. Verse 4, they, the nations, will destroy the walls of Tyre. Not he, Nebuchadnezzar, but they, the nations. And then in verse 4, I will scrape the soil and turn her into a spare rock. That's God will do that. And then verse 5, she, Tyre, will become a place in the sea to spread nets. So God is going to scrape the soil, turn old Tyre into a bare rock as a place to spread fish nets. Now God is doing that, and in verse 4, God is linked with they. I am going to do this, and they will destroy the walls. The they refers to the nations in verse 3. The nations are going to do that. It's not referring to he, Nebuchadnezzar. You drop down to verse 12, they, the nations. And that, of course, would be Alexander the Great. Argument over, liberals lose. We go down to Ezekiel 26, verse 14. Yahweh continues, I will make you a bare rock and will become a place to spread fish nets. And there you see the connection between verses 4 and 5, the bare rock, the fish nets. I will make you a bare rock, and you will become a place to spread fish nets. You will never be rebuilt, for I, the Lord, have spoken, declares the Sovereign Lord. Verse 14, I will make you a bare rock. Let me repeat again in verses 4 and 5. Verse 14 says, I will make you a bare rock, and you will become a place to spread fish nets. So let me connect bare rock and fish nets in verse 14 to the bare rock and fish nets in verses 4 and 5. They, that's the nations, under Alexander, will destroy the walls of Tyre and tear down its towers. Then I will sweep up the dust and turn Tyre into a bare rock. There's the bare rock, verse 4. Verse 5, it will become a place by the sea where people spread their fishing nets. So that was fulfilled under Alexander the Great. Now, there's a further prophecy at the end of verse 14. You, Tyre, will never be rebuilt. Now, there's a problem there because New Tyre has been rebuilt. Old Tyre, of course, has been lost. It's gone, covered over by a modern city. But New Tyre still got some people out there. How do we answer that? Well, there's two basic ways to answer it. The first way is by interpreting Ezekiel as to say that Tyre will never be rebuilt to its former glory. You will never be rebuilt, meaning into a big trade emporium, a leader in world trade. It's not that some little rump village might live on you at some time in the future. That's the easiest way to answer it. Another way to answer it is to say that Ezekiel is using hyperbole. The Hebrews were noted for hyperbole. That argument sometimes is a good argument, but sometimes it's too strong. We'll look at it in just a minute. Let's look first of all to the first argument, that Ezekiel is saying that Tyre will never be rebuilt to its former glory. Let me read you from John Gill. This must be understood with some restriction and limitation, as that it should not be built any more in the same stately manner, or be raised to royal dignity, and be governed in the grand manner it had been, or be built upon the same spot, or after its last destruction, to which the prophecy may have respect. It being usual in Scripture for prophecies to regard what is more remote as well as more near. For upon the destruction of Tyre by Nebuchadnezzar, it was to be restored after 70 years, according to Isaiah's prophecy in Isaiah 23. So we don't want to have two prophets contradicting each other, Isaiah and Ezekiel. And many years after this, New Tyre was besieged, taken, and destroyed by Alexander. So if you say Tyre, the old Tyre, which is a bare rock, will never be rebuilt, well, what about New Tyre? We could count that as rebuilding it, maybe. Or if you separate them out, I guess you could say old Tyre's never been rebuilt. But we're going to assume here that New Tyre is a continuation of old Tyre, and we say, well, that's okay. It's been rebuilt, but it's never been rebuilt to its former glory. Gill goes on to say that in Jerome's time, I think he was late 300s AD, and in Jerome's time, Tyre was a most noble and beautiful city, as he on this passage observes. Indeed, as Kimchi says, a Jewish rabbi, who lived near 1,000 years after Jerome, the city then built in his time called Tyre was built upon the continent near the seashore. So what Gill is saying is that we can't say that Tyre was never rebuilt at all. It's just never been rebuilt to the way it used to be. Going along with that is an apologist named Doug Powell, writing in the Holman Guide to Christian Apologetics. Powell says this, though today there is a tiny fishing village on the spot of ancient Tyre, the great city has never been rebuilt, fulfilling the prophecy of the second half of verse 14. Josh McDowell suggests the phrase, will never be found again, means that though men attempted to rebuild Tyre, she will never be elevated to her former position of wealth and splendor. I think we're on the right track here. GotQuestions.org puts it this way. We'll focus on the word rebuilt. If Tyre were to be truly rebuilt, then everything mentioned in Ezekiel 27 would have to be restored. National prominence and regional influence, national strength and security, wealth and prosperity and opulence. All these are mentioned in Ezekiel 27, the next chapter. The prophecy of Ezekiel 26:14 does not mean there would never be anything built on the island. It means that after its final defeat by wave after wave of conquerors, Tyre would never regain the status it held in Ezekiel's day. Tyre would never again be a commercial superpower, a world trader, or a colonizer. Tyrians would never again possess the riches and prosperity they had in their city's heyday. Now, all of these authorities here are assuming that Ezekiel is saying New Tyre would never be rebuilt. But if you make it refer to old Tyre never was rebuilt, as far as I know. That would kind of take care of the problem, too. But we'll assume it's New Tyre, and I think that's the easiest way to answer it. New Tyre is not going to be raised to its position of former glory. Now, here's another way we can deal with this prophecy that Tyre will never be rebuilt. This is from J.P. Holding. He says that Ezekiel is using hyperbole. He's got a very interesting quote here. I'll now bring in specific insights learned from observation of the ancient use of hyperbole, especially in oracles of war. Consider first this statement from Ramses III, that's an Egyptian pharaoh, I slew the Dinyan in their islands while the Cheker and Philistines were made ashes. The Sherdin and the Washesh of the sea were made non-existent, captured altogether and brought on captivity to Egypt like the sands of the shore. So J.P. Holding continues, Ramses speaks of the Sherdin and Washesh being made non-existent, but then goes on to say they were captured. Is this contradictory? Of course not. The made non-existent part is manifestly trash talk. In the victory stele of Merneptah, we also see trash talk like, Ashkelon is conquered, Gezer seized, Yanoam made non-existent. Well, that's an exaggeration. Yanoam is not non-existent. Clearly literal descriptions, conquered, seized, are mixed with clearly metaphorical ones, made non-existent. And that is what I now argue we have here. The threat that Tyre would be built no more is trash talk like that of Ramses speaking of his non-existent captured people. Therefore, there is no need for my previous arguments with respect to the identities of the ancient and modern cities or never finding the city again. I don't know what those previous arguments were. Might be some of the ones I just used. Ezekiel does not predict a permanent destruction, but uses the ancient metaphors of war to describe the seriousness of Tyre's predicament. In other words, Ezekiel is just saying, you're toast, you're not coming back, you'll never be rebuilt. And that's very similar to the first argument, which is that you'll never be rebuilt to your former glory. Now, I've spent a lot of time on verse 14 because liberals love to say, see there, it's not true, it didn't happen, so therefore don't believe that Jesus rose from the dead, don't believe your silly myths. Your superstitions? No. Ezekiel was a prophet inspired by the Holy Spirit of God. You know, God did all of this for us. He sent these prophets. They endured incredible hardships and persecution. Why? So that we could have some inclination of what's going on in heaven and what is God's will. We, a rebellious human race, which should have been left to die in our own dung. But God graciously sent prophets, and what do we human beings do? Kill the prophets, ignore the prophets, laugh at the prophets. I've even got one quote here from a liberal who says that Ezekiel, since he made false prophets, should be stoned. No, it's not Ezekiel who should be stoned. It's liberals, especially liberal Protestants. They should get two stones for every one stone thrown at liberals in general. We go now to Ezekiel 26, verses 15 through 21. This is what the sovereign Lord says to Tyre. Will not the coastlands tremble at the sound of your fall? When the wounded groan and the slaughter takes place in you, then all the princes of the coast will step down from their thrones and lay aside their robes and take off their embroidered garments. Clothed with terror, they will sit on the ground, trembling every moment, appalled at you. Now, I'm not sure which destruction is being talked about here, either Nebuchadnezzar or Alexander's, or maybe both, probably both. So the princes of the coast, Tyre's on the coast, the princes of Tyre will step down from their thrones, lay aside their robes, take off their embroidered garments. That would probably include all the other cities on the coast, places like Byblos, Issus. They will step down from their thrones, lay aside their robes, take off their embroidered garments. Clothed with terror, they will sit on the ground, trembling every moment, appalled at you. They were appalled because when Tyre went down, that means that both Nebuchadnezzar and Alexander the Great were on the march, and of course those great empires are not going to ignore the cities along the coast, which were not very militarily oriented, by the way. The Phoenician cities were interested in money and commerce. They were not interested in having a strong military. And so, yes, they're going to be upset, trembling every minute, appalled. Verse 17, then they will take up a lament concerning you and say to you, Tyre, how you are destroyed, O city of renown, peopled by men of the sea. Remember, Tyre's on the coast. They're people by men of the sea. They're seafaring people. You are a power on the seas, you and your citizens. You put your terror on all who live there. This is what the sovereign Lord says. When I make you a desolate city, like cities no longer inhabited, and when I bring the ocean depths over you and its vast waters cover you, Then I will bring you down with those who go down to the pit, to the people of long ago. I will make you dwell in the earth below, as in ancient ruins, with those who go down to the pit. Those who go down to the pit are those who go down to the grave, dead people. And you will not return to take your place in the land of the living. In other words, you're going to die, Tyre. I will bring you to a horrible end, and you will be no more. You will be salt, but you will never again be found, declares the Sovereign Lord. Now Ezekiel in verse 15 says, this is what the Sovereign Lord says to Tyre. One wonders whether the Tyrians actually heard the prophecy. I imagine they did. Ezekiel probably delivered the prophecy to Tyrian ambassadors who were present in Babylon, or maybe merchants who were trading with Babylon. He just passed the word on to them in written form. I'm not going to go over again all the hellfire and damnation preaching that Ezekiel did. It's pretty obvious. Fall, wounded, groan, slaughter. Let me look at some key words here. Take off your clothes. You're clothed with terror instead. You're trembling. You're appalled. You lament. You're destroyed. You're in terror. You're trembling. You're terrified. And then in verse 19, he says, I'm going to bring the ocean depths over you, and its vast waters will cover you. When I read that, I wondered whether it was literal or metaphorical, and I assumed it was metaphorical. As it turns out, there's a split of opinion on that. Benson suggests, optionally, that the covering of the sea is literal. Quote, literally of the sea overflowing and covering a great part of the ancient seat of the city in consequence of the walls and outworks thereof being demolished. And I can imagine that happening. It would be at least a partial covering. Ellicott says that, in his view, it's metaphorical. I tend to agree with Ellicott because in the same phrase there, you have the city going down to the pit. How can a city go down into a grave to consort with dead people? So just to be consistent, I would take both parts of the phrase metaphorically. Verse 19, I bring the ocean depths over you and its vast waters cover you. And then verse 20, then I will bring you down with those who go down to the pit. Again, how can... Well, I guess you could say literally the waters will cover and drown people and then send them down to the grave. I don't think so. I think it's metaphorical. I will make you dwell as in ancient ruins in the earth below. Not only in the water, not only are you covered with water, but you go down deep into the pits into where graves are, and you're living on the earth in ancient ruins. This is all just language to show that your future is not bright, Tyre. You're not going to come back to the land of the living. You're going to be dead, period. Again, cities don't die. This is all metaphor. Verse 21, I will bring you to a horrible end, says Yahweh, and you will be no more. You will be salt, but you will never again be found. No more and never again. Now that sounds very similar to verse 14, which we've already talked about. Verse 14 says, the city will never be rebuilt. Here in verse 21, Ezekiel says the city will be no more and never again be found. The two ideas are similar, not quite the same. Here's what Hank Hanegraaff says about the fact that Tyre will be no more. The most astonishing of Ezekiel's predictions was that Tyre would never be rebuilt. So Hanegraaff is talking about verse 14. I'm quoting him here as referring to verse 21. Tyre never being rebuilt, this is singularly incredible because Tyre is strategically located on the east coast of the Mediterranean Sea. It also contains the springs of Rasselein, which pump 10 million gallons of fresh water daily, enough to take care of the needs of a modern city. Yet history records that after a succession of invasions, Tyre finally and irrevocably fell in AD 1291, that's to the Muslims, never to be rebuilt again. Today, Tyre has been humbled to the point of becoming a place for the drying of fishermen's nets, just as Ezekiel prophesied 2.5 millennia ago. I think that Tyre was never rebuilt because the harbor silted up. But for whatever reason, it hasn't been rebuilt like it used to be. It is no more. It will be salt, but never again be found. You're not going to find it like it used to be. Now, it could be that the translation is causing us a little bit of a problem. You will be no more. Let's run through some ways we can defend against a possible objection. Ah, but Tyre is in existence afterwards. Ezekiel was wrong to say the city was no more. There is a city of Tyre there now in the present. I think I read on Wikipedia it's got 130,000 people in it on the new city. Well, here's how we answer that. First of all, if we're talking about old Tyre, that's true. I mean, that's literally true. It is no more. It has never again been found. The old Tyre is so lost, archaeologists can't find it now. As Matthew Poole says, if any will be so curious as to inquire, if they come to seek out the footsteps of this ancient Tyre, they shall lose their labor. No signs of it on the rock where once it stood. Rich, populous, potent, wise, renowned Tyre, as once thou wast, shall never more be found. And alas, that which is now on the continent is not fit to bear its name, much less to be counted the same city. That's because it's just a simple fishing village. This is in the 19th century when Poole wrote. But, again, some people want to tie New Tyre in with Old Tyre here. And New Tyre does have people living on it. So that presents a problem to us. You will be no more and never again be found. Well, that's option number one. Say it just refers to Old Tyre. How about option number two? No more could be translated not for a long time. The Hebrew word olam is in the text in verse 21. I checked it out, and olam can mean for a long time in addition to forever. So we could say not for a long time. Lo is not for a long time. And so Tyre will be wiped out and won't be seen again for a long time. I don't know how long it would be before people started putting dwellings back on New Tyre. Option number three, and this is the option I prefer, I mentioned it earlier, Tyre will never be restored to its former glory. Here's what Doug Powell says, the apologist, quoting Josh McDowell. I've already quoted this once, I'll quote it again. Josh McDowell suggests the phrase will never be found again means that though men attempted to rebuild Tyre, she will never be elevated to her former position of wealth and splendor. Here's option number four. This is my idea. I will bring you to a horrible end and you will be no more. You will be sought, but you will never again be found. That could refer just to the destruction at that time of Alexander the Great and not referring to any time in the future. For example, the five chaps in the Titan submersible going down to look at the Titanic were the victims of an implosion and they are no more. That's it. It's over. Referring to what happened last couple of months, not they're going to be disappeared for an eternity. Option number five. Ezekiel is using hyperbole. This is J.P. Holding's idea, just at verse 14. The city will never be rebuilt. It would be like Jesus saying the destruction of the temple in AD 70 would be like a disaster which has never before been seen or will be seen since. Never before been seen? What about Noah's flood that covered the whole earth? Exaggeration. The Jews were good at that. Now, I want to finish up this long audio with a summary of Ezekiel 26. This is from Trevor Major of Apologetics Press. He lists the predictions of Ezekiel 26, and then he shows how they're fulfilled in history. So this will give us a good overview and a good way to finish up this chapter. Prediction number one, Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon shall destroy the mainland. This is in Ezekiel 26, 7 and 8. For this is what the Lord God says, see, I'm about to bring King Nebuchadnezzar. He will slaughter your villages on the mainland. He will set up siege works, etc. Fulfillment. Nebuchadnezzar II laid siege to Tyre for 13 years, beginning in 585 to 586. During this time, the inhabitants transferred most of their valuables to the island. That's from Old Tyre to New Tyre. The king, Nebuchadnezzar, seized Tyre's mainland territories, Old Tyre, but returned to Babylon, finding himself unable to subdue the island fortress militarily. Tyre, weakened by the conflict, soon recognized Babylonian authority, which effectively ended the city's autonomy and any aspirations for a greater Phoenicia. So Tyre not destroyed, but nevertheless subdued by Babylon. Prediction number two, other nations are to participate in the fulfillment of the prophecy. This is in verse 3 of Ezekiel 26. Therefore, this is what the Lord God says. See, I am against you, Tyre. I will raise up many nations against you, just as the sea raises its waves. How is that fulfilled? Following the Babylonian period, Tyre remained in subjection to Persia from 538 to 332. In 332, Alexander the Great besieged and captured the port, and the Ptolemies, Seleucids, Romans, and Muslim Arabs all had their turn at rule. As you go through those old ancient Near Eastern empires, after passing briefly into the hands of the Crusaders, the city was destroyed completely by the Mamelukes. Those were Muslims. And that happened in AD 1291. And Tyre goes buzzing off into the footnotes of history. Prediction number three. The city is to be flattened like the top of a rock. This is in Ezekiel 26:4 and 26:14. Ezekiel 26:4 says, they will destroy the walls of Tyre and demolish her towers. I will scrape the soil from her and turn her into a bare rock. Ezekiel 26:14, I will turn you into a bare rock, and you will be a place to spread nets. You will never be rebuilt, for I, Yahweh, have spoken. This is the declaration of the Lord God. When was this fulfilled? Like Nebuchadnezzar, Alexander was stymied by Tyre's natural moat. The brilliant Macedonian, that's Alexander, was not so quick to give up, however. He used the building materials of the mainland city and any other rocks and soil in the immediate vicinity to build a causeway to the island. His complete conquest of Tyre took only 7 months. Prediction number 4, Tyre is to become a place for the spreading of nets. We read that in Ezekiel 26, verse 5, she will become a place in the sea to spread nets. Ezekiel 26, 14, I will turn you into a bare rock, and you will be a place to spread nets. Here's the fulfillment. The waters around Tyre were renowned in ancient times for their fishing. This is a quote from an author named Liverani, 1988. This was all the fame the city could claim after its complete decimation by Alexander. It was famous for fishing, nothing else. Fifth prediction. Tyre's stones and timbers are to be laid in the sea. Ezekiel 26:12, they will take your wealth as spoil and plunder your merchandise. They will also demolish your walls and tear down your beautiful homes. Then they will throw your stones, timber, and soil into the water. Fulfillment of this prediction. As noted in item 3 above, the building of the causeway came from the remains of the mainland city. Sands carried by currents have built up a spit or tombolo around the causeway, forming a permanent connection between the island and the mainland. Prediction number 6. Other cities are to fear greatly at the fall of Tyre. We read that in verses 15 through 18 of Ezekiel 26. This is what the Lord God says to Tyre. Won't the coast and islands quake at the sound of your downfall when the wounded groan and slaughter occurs within you? All the princes of the sea will descend from their thrones, remove their robes, and strip off their embroidered garments. They will clothe themselves with trembling. They will sit on the ground, tremble continually, and be appalled at you. Then they will lament for you and say of you, how you have perished, city of renown, you who were populated from the seas. She who was powerful on the sea, she and all her inhabitants inflicted their terror. Now the coastlands tremble on the day of your downfall. The islands and the sea are alarmed by your demise. Fulfillment of that. Many fortified cities in the region capitulated to Alexander after they saw the genius and relative ease with which he captured Tyre. Prediction number 7, and we will be finished. The city will not be inhabited. Tyre will not be inhabited or rebuilt. This is in verses 20 and 21. Then I will bring you down to be with those who descend to the pit, to the people of antiquity. I will make you dwell in the underworld like the ancient ruins with those who descend to the pit, so that you will no longer be inhabited or display your splendor in the land of the living. I will make you an object of horror, and you will no longer exist. You will be sought, but will never be found again. Fulfillment. Alexander sold almost all of Tyre's inhabitants into slavery, and the city forever lost its importance on the world stage. Any vestiges of strength and power disappeared with the destruction of the Crusader fortress. Saur, as it is known by Arabs today, is a small town in southern Lebanon with a population of about 14,000. This is a 1990 estimate. Refugees have inflated that number significantly in the last several years, but basically it's just a small town. Again, Tyre has never been restored to its former glory. Ladies and gentlemen, we have finally finished with this difficult and long chapter, but important chapter, chapter 26 of Ezekiel. We are now prepared to go to chapter 27 in Ezekiel, and I will entitle that chapter, A Lament for Tyre. So we're still not finished with Tyre. Hope you stay tuned for our next audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.